This is Virginia Insight. I'm Tom Graham. So you're a full-grown adult, a scientist, and you notice something strange happening to you. You've been looking into personality styles portrayed in kids' TV shows, so you've been watching lots of TV. But you begin to notice after seeing certain types of shows, you find it really difficult to concentrate. What do you do? Well, if you're researcher Angeline Lillard, you design a study to see whether there is something truly going on and whether it could have a serious impact on young children. What you may not expect is that headlines about your eventual report go international almost overnight, and much of the media coverage seems to be missing the point. Psychologist Angeline Lillard is lead author of what's become known as the SpongeBob study, but her findings about possible effects of certain kinds of TV on kids go much further than you probably heard. So we'll get details directly from her right after the news. I'm Tom Graham, and this is Virginia Insight. What effect does watching television have on you? What effect does watching television have on children? Do kids need to watch less TV? Or might they benefit from watching less of certain kinds of programs, but more of others? These are questions appropriate to be discussing most any time, but perhaps even more appropriate now with a new University of Virginia study just published in the journal Pediatrics. The lead author of that study is with us. More about her and her findings in a moment. But first, our phone number, 888-WMRA-TALK. If you have comments or questions about the effects of TV on kids, or the effect on the population in general, for that matter, you are invited to join in at 888-967-2825. Or you can post to us on Facebook, where we are listed as WMRA's Virginia Insight. The new scientific study is officially titled The Immediate Impact of Different Types of Television on Young Children's Executive Function, but it has become unofficially known in recent weeks as the SpongeBob Report. University of Virginia psychologist Angeline Lillard is lead author of the study. Angel, welcome back to the Insight Studios.
Thank you. It's nice to be here.
So what do you think it's most important for people to know about this study and your findings?
What we found was that after watching just 9 minutes of SpongeBob SquarePants, which we categorize as a fast-paced, fantastical television show, children's executive function, which basically means their problem-solving, their readiness to learn, to be able to follow instructions, was significantly impaired relative to children who'd been watching a more slow-paced television show, namely Caillou in the study, or who had just been drawing.
Well, that probably means we ought to ask you a little bit more about just exactly what was done in this study. As you've hinted, you exposed children to three different types of stimuli. So give us the specifics about how this study was prepared and performed.
Okay, so 60 different children were brought.
60.
A total of 60 children came into the laboratory at the University of Virginia Child Development Labs. We basically called the parents on the phone and asked if they could come in. They brought them in, and we would then randomly assign children to one of the three conditions. They'd go back into an experiment.
And explain the three conditions again.
So they'd go to an experiment room, and in one of the conditions, the children would watch for 9 minutes, SpongeBob SquarePants on a little notebook computer. And in another condition, they would watch Caillou for 9 minutes. And in another condition, they would draw for 9 minutes. So there were 20 children in each of these three conditions.
And just in case there are not any people in the audience who are parents or grandparents of young children, SpongeBob, most people, I imagine, have heard of no matter what their exposure to children is. Caillou, maybe not so much.
Caillou is a French-Canadian show that comes out on PBS, and it's about a four-year-old boy and his everyday life and routines. The nine-minute episode that we showed had him baking cookies, learning to swim, and also his baby sister came home from the hospital. It sounds like a lot for 9 minutes, but it's slow-paced because the camera angles don't change very, very often. The dialogue is a bit slower. Whereas if you've ever watched SpongeBob, it is boom, 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 boom. Very quick changes, very loud, lots going on. And in that case, they watched an episode about Sandy the squirrel going into hibernation.
And the difference is that might also be worth mentioning between SpongeBob and Caillou. They're both cartoons. They're both animated shows. But Caillou, although in animation, portrays what look like real people.
That's right. It's real people, but also things are happening that really happen in real life. And we think that this might be a really important element of why SpongeBob had its effects. And I'll go on with the procedure and what we did more in a moment. But when you watch SpongeBob, all kinds of things are happening that don't happen in real life. So, for example, he'll wake up and instead of walking out of bed like most of us do, his bed pops up and catapults him out and he's sailing through the air and he goes for many, many miles and he lands in a lake and he's suddenly wearing an astronaut costume and his best friend is right next to him. And that happens in a couple seconds. And so our thinking was that this might be difficult for young children to make sense of it. Adults can't make sense of it. And indeed, the reason why we ran this study was because I had been finding that after having to watch the show myself afterwards, I had a great deal of trouble working later in the afternoon. I had trouble concentrating. And so I wondered, well, what happens to children? Is this difficult for them to process as well in a way that would influence their ability to think?
So SpongeBob is a show made up of fantastical characters, as opposed to the other cartoon that children were watching, which was made up of, although animated, real-looking people. And then the third condition that you had was 20 of these 60 children, one at a time actually not watching any TV show at all, but just drawing and playing quietly.
That's right. We just gave them some paper and pens and markers and said you can just draw for a while.
So, and you said that what you were looking at was executive function, which basically is child's ability to concentrate and to perform tasks.
Yeah, so executive function is a term that refers to our prefrontal lobe, you know, prefrontal cortex guided activities. It's what enables us to engage in goal-directed behaviors. Our ability to solve problems gets driven by our prefrontal lobes, our ability to focus attention on something and stick with it and to concentrate, our ability to come up with a goal and organize our behaviors towards meeting that goal are all mediated by executive function.
And all of your test subjects, all of these 60 children, were all 4 years of age?
They were all 4 years of age.
So what did you find out?
Well, we gave them four classic tests of executive function after they had watched these shows. So one of those tests is called a delay of gratification test. It's a Walter Michel test that's been around for a long time where children are given a choice between having a small snack anytime they want or waiting until you come back in the room for a larger snack. So they can have one marshmallow now, or they can have this, you know, large plate of 10 marshmallows if they can wait till you come back. And if they can't wait, they just have to ring a bell that's in the middle of the table, and you'll come back anytime and they can have the one. So you look at how many seconds they wait. So that's the delay of gratification task. One of the problem-solving tasks was the Tower of Hanoi, which is a well-known psychology test where there are different discs and children have to move the disc from one peg to another following a certain set of rules. You can never put a fatter disc on top of a smaller one, for example. And that was done in a child version where they were described as monkeys and the monkey can't touch the water and the daddy monkey can't get on top of the baby and so on. So that was the second task that we gave them. A third task was just backwards working memory where we gave them a string of digits and words, and then they had to repeat them to us backwards. And you look at how far they can go, how long of strings they can do.
So from what I remember reading of the report, the tester might say something like 6, 5, 4. And to get the answer right, the child would have to repeat 4, 5, 6.
Exactly. And then finally, the head, toes, knees, shoulders task, where when I say head, I want you to touch your toes. And when I say touch your toes, I want you to touch your head. And they have to follow those instructions backwards and you go through several. And then if they do really well on that, you add a second rule. When I say touch your knees, I want you to touch your shoulders. And when I say touch your shoulders, I want you to touch your knees. So they've got to bear these directions in mind and do the opposite of what you ask them, kind of like Simon says.
And when I was reading the report, Angel, I got to tell you that I was thinking that some of the stuff I wouldn't follow really well. But what was really impressive is that for some of these children, they did real well on these tests.
That's right.
But not the kids who were watching SpongeBob.
That's right. That's right.
So tell us more.
Okay. So we gave them these four tests afterwards. And what we found was, although they'd been randomly assigned a condition, and although their parents filling out a attention survey had reported them as being about equal, no matter which condition they were in, the children who had had the 9 minutes of watching SpongeBob did significantly worse on these tests than the children who'd watched Caillou or the children who'd been drawing.
And your supposition for why?
Our supposition for why is that something about watching that particular show just shook their mind up and they weren't able to focus and concentrate and pay attention right afterwards.
Research psychologist Angeline Lillard is our guest. She is lead author of a new report in this month's issue of the journal Pediatrics that has become known as the SpongeBob Study. This is Virginia Insight. I'm Tom Graham. If you have a question or comment for Dr. Lillard, all of our phone lines are now open at 888-967-2825, or you can reach us on Facebook, where we are listed as WMRA's Virginia Insight. So it's my understanding, Angel, that you've been sort of surprised at the media reaction to this report of yours.
The media reaction was certainly bigger than we expected, and internationally, too. I didn't realize that SpongeBob is actually very popular across the globe, but it was interesting. And I think, you know, it's a show that evokes strong feelings. People either tend to really love SpongeBob or really hate SpongeBob. And also, people care a lot about children and what they're watching and what's happening to them. And for these reasons as well, it evokes strong feelings.
So tell us about some of the reactions, some of the specifics of the reaction.
Well, you had, say, parents who said, you know, this is ridiculous. You know, my children love this show. They're going to keep watching this show. Parents who said, my children get a lot of positive information from SpongeBob as well. You had the Nickelodeon people saying we were testing the wrong age because they don't.
Nickelodeon, for those who didn't know, is the network that runs SpongeBob. And their response was?
One of their responses was, we didn't make the show for four-year-olds, so they were testing the wrong age group. And that's quite humorous because it was very popular with four-year-olds. I had one parent say, well, good, maybe they'll stop making the size 4T pajamas that my child keeps begging me for. You know, regardless of who it's being made for, the case is that children do watch it at that age. They also criticized the study.
It's like the most popular show for children ages 2 to 4, isn't it?
2 to 11.
And
2 to 11.
The Nickelodeon's response is you shouldn't be testing four-year-olds because the show is made for kids ages 6 to 12.
Right, right. They also noted that there were only 20 children in the SpongeBob condition, and so how could we base anything on 20 children? As a scientist, you say, well, but we did randomly assign children to condition. And the reason we do statistical tests is to be sure that our results are different from what you would expect by chance when you randomly assign children. So although it was only 20, there are the statistics behind it. Another thing, though, that they didn't know, to be fair, is that we have replicated the study now twice with different episodes of SpongeBob with, of course, different children. We used Arthur instead of Caillou. We used playing instead of drawing. And the effects have held even in these replications. So it does seem to really be a solid effect.
Sheila in Waynesboro, thanks so much for calling in on Virginia Insight. Your question or comment for psychologist Angeline Lillard, please.
Hi, am I on the air?
Yes, you are.
Okay. I just wondered if there was any difference between those that watched no TV versus those that watched any TV, no matter what it was.
We did not do something where we combined the Caillou children with the SpongeBob children. In general, though, the children who had been watching Caillou were doing just fine.
But you also had children who watched no TV who were just drawing.
Right.
And they did much better than the children who were watching SpongeBob, but about the same as the children who are watching Caillou.
That's right.
Am I remembering what I read correctly? Sheila, does that address your question?
It does.
It sounds like you have a follow-up. What I'm going to have to do is ask you if you would be patient and stay there on hold for just about 1 minute. And in about that amount of time, we'll be back from this short break. The new report's full title is The Immediate Impact of Different Types of Television on Young Children's Executive Function. But it has become unofficially known in recent weeks as the SpongeBob Report. Its lead author, psychologist Angeline Lillard, is here in the Insight studio. This is Virginia Insight. I'm Tom Graham. Call in phone number 888-WMRA-TALK. Unfortunately, during the break, we lost Sheila's call. Don't know if her cell phone signal had a problem or she decided that she couldn't stay with us. But as I understand her question, Angel, basically she was saying is how much do we know about the difference between abilities of children who watch no TV and kids who watch any kind of TV?
Yes. You know, there has not been a lot of research on children who don't watch any TV. And one of the reasons is you can't randomly assign children to that condition. And so then if you look at children who out in the world naturally don't watch television, their parents are probably different in a lot of ways than children whose parents have the television on.
And yet in this study, you had three different groups. One, the children, the four-year-olds who were watching SpongeBob. Two, the children who were watching a PBS cartoon that was much slower paced. And three, children who weren't watching any TV for the test period but were quietly drawing in a room. And what you found was those second two, the kids watching the PBS cartoon and the kids who weren't watching TV but drawing, that their executive function, that their cognitive abilities in these tests done afterward was much better than the kids who watched SpongeBob.
Right, and they performed about the same. So you can say on the particular types of tests that we used, there wasn't a difference between no television and a slow-paced, you know, termed educational television show.
But and you did fairly extensive questionnaires with the parents of all these children, and all these kids, all 60 of them, had been watching TV a fair amount before they were exposed to this test.
In this first study, they were actually below the usual amount of television for children their ages. In our other studies, it just so happens that the children who've been coming into the lab are more usual. Your usual preschooler's watching about 2 hours of TV a day.
Kevin in McGackie's Field, thanks for joining us on Virginia Insight. Your question, orchologist Angeline Lillard, please.
I was wondering if there was any concrete difference between the performance of the children who drew and played quietly versus the children who watched Caillou. And also, I was wondering if the children's lack of ability to perform the task might show a disinterest in the task rather than a lack of capability to perform them.
The children who'd been watching Caillou and the children who'd been drawing, there was no notable difference between their performance. In terms of, is it just that they weren't as interested? I think we can have the researcher on the phone in a moment with this, but what we saw was basically they all are interested in doing these tasks and trying to do these tasks as well as they can.
And because they're randomly assigned and you've done this study a couple of times now, you're figuring there's no reason to believe that the kids who are watching SpongeBob are in any way significantly different from the kids who are doing the other?
Not at the outset, no.
Does that address your question, Kevin?
Sort of. I mean, I'm also curious if maybe watching surreal fast-paced shows like SpongeBob, just to play the devil's advocate, temporarily impairs their ability to perform certain functions, but also helps them cope with perhaps the surreality and the absurdity and the fast-paced nature of modern life.
That's a question. We don't know what the long-term effects are. I think in general, you know, people bring up questions like this. Is it better for children if their parents, say, don't respond to them when they're crying because that's going to teach them how to cope with things on their own? And it's a developmental question. It ends up that when parents respond and give their children the things that they need when they're really young, they actually then can take care of themselves better when they're older. And my sense is, brains are just developing at these young ages. And to be doing a lot of things that cause a lot of mix-up in there might have long-term impacts, but we don't know. We haven't done those studies.
Kevin, thank you so much for your call. Joining us now by phone is the co-author of the new report that we've been discussing. When she first began research on this study more than 2 years ago, she was in the process of finishing up her bachelor's degree in psychology at the University of Virginia, as well as already working on the first year of her graduate program in education. Well, now she is just a few weeks away from finishing that graduate degree and is also doing an internship in speech pathology at Rady Children's Hospital in San Diego. Jennifer Peterson. Ms. Peterson, thanks for taking a few minutes out of your hospital rounds to speak with us.
Thanks for having me on the show.
So, Jen, from your perspective, what do you think people most need to know about this study? What do you think is most important about your findings?
Well, I think that this project was really interesting to complete because it's so applicable to parents everywhere, and just everyone wonders, what should I be watching? What should I watch with my child? What should I be doing with my child during the day? And I think it was a really great study to kind of marry both the fields of psychology and communication disorders, because kids who have trouble communicating, parents are wondering, what should I be doing with them? And it's a very functional study that you can say, okay, well, when kids are watching SpongeBob immediately after, this is what we're finding. And it's been really great to be able to share with some of the families I've been working with, and to have them educated and have research to support the advice I'm giving to parents.
What I think is so important too is that they recognize that right after children have been watching a show like this, it's very fast-paced and fantastical, that they not have the same expectations that they normally have. I was just at a conference, and a Canadian psychologist who had been asked to comment on this study when it aired in Canada told me that it had completely changed their morning routine, because it used to be that they got ready for work in the morning and the children were then allowed to watch television until mom and dad were ready to leave the house. And then they always had trouble getting the children together to leave the house. And he said, now we just don't let them watch TV in that little bit of time. They can sit down with a book or they can draw, and they go out the door much more easily. So it's, very
practical.
Was
it particularly SpongeBob that they've been watching that got them agitated? Or?
They watched whatever they watched in the morning. So it could have been SpongeBob, could have been something else.
Jennifer Peterson, there in San Diego, it's my understanding that back when you were doing some of the original research on this study that just this month is published in the journal Pediatrics, that as part of your work as a graduate student in speech pathology, you were also making some home visits to young children, and that you were kind of struck by how important television seemed to be in the homes of people who had young children.
Yeah, one of my first couple of clients were just families, and it was interesting to hear stories from professors and to go into houses and have the big screen TV as the prominent feature that was always on with a fast-paced TV show, and trying to get the child to pay attention to my toys. It was just the simple first thing that I would tell parents is, okay, let's turn off the TV. And as soon as we turned off the TV, it's always so much easier to get the children to engage in the toys or the therapy activities that I brought. So it was just so interesting that so many times the TV was the most prominent feature in the house, and really getting the word out there and sharing information about how we can bring toys in and kind of have TV time and play time and different ways to have the child interact.
Right, and there's a study by Dan Anderson showing that when there's background television on, young children play with toys shows less persistence with the same toys, so they shift their attention much more just having it on in the background.
University of Virginia psychologist Angeline Lillard is here in the Inside Studio with me. With us by phone is one of her former students, Jennifer Peterson, who's now finishing up an internship at Rady Children's Hospital in San Diego. Jen, on the phone line, can only stay with us for a few more minutes, so if you have a question specifically for her, please get to the phone in a hurry at 888-967-2825. 888-WMRA-TALK, or just the fact that this is a fascinating subject and you want to participate, and we've got some open phone lines, this would be a good time to call us at 888-WMRA-TALK. Steve in Richmond. Steven, thank you for joining us. Your question, your comment, please.
Yes, I was just curious. I'm actually a psychology student at Liberty University, and I was just curious if she thinks that there's going to be a difference in the response from younger kids as if there's a response from older kids. Like, I know you guys said that Nick Leary had made a comment about how the show was more focused toward older children. If she thinks that if children, let's just say 8 to 10 or maybe 8 to 12, if they would have a different response if they watch the same show.
Right.
And then you had to test it. Do you think that there would be a difference in the response from them?
We haven't tested 8 to 10 yet. We have tested 6-year-olds, and the effect was there for 6-year-olds as well. There was no difference between the 4 and the 6-year-olds in terms of their response. But we do want to go on and look at older children. What's important to note, though, too, there is that we were using, in this first study with Jen Peterson, 9-minute episodes, and then we've gone on and done full 11-minute episodes. So sometimes these shows have 11-minute episodes, and they put two together in a half-hour show with the commercials. There are other ones, many of them are 24 minutes, and so we need to go on and look at when children watch a longer episode, how does it influence them, and how does it influence older children? And what's the result of, you know, repeated watching? Children will often be watching for an hour or so. They can watch as many of these shows as they want with a computer these days.
Stephen, thanks so much for your call. Angeline Lillard, Stephen's question reminds me of what you and I had discussed some weeks ago, is how you came to be doing this originally. As I understand it, you had a grant to be looking at, in shorthand terms, personality styles portrayed in different TV shows, among other things. So you were looking at TV shows that showed niceness versus meanness. And as a result of examining lots of different children's shows, one of the ones that you were watching was SpongeBob. And on those days when you had watched SpongeBob in the morning, you found in the afternoon?
It was hard to work. I couldn't focus. I couldn't pay attention. My brain was gone. And so,
I got to tell you that it's been a long time since I've watched SpongeBob, but knowing that today was coming up, I forced myself yesterday to watch two different episodes. And I could tell after about 15 minutes of watching, I was getting a fairly bad headache. Knowing that Caillou, as Jen had mentioned to me, was one of the control TV shows that the PBS animated cartoon. I then watched an episode of it, and my headache started to go away, and I started to feel more calm. Jen Peterson, I'm wondering if you had any similar experience with all your exposure to these different children's shows?
I did. Actually, when I was researching, I was trying to find a good SpongeBob episode, and I got to watch between 50 and 60 episodes, and I definitely noticed going to class that night was a lot harder than the episodes where I was watching, than the times where I was watching 50 to 60 episodes of Caillou. So I think it's definitely there, and the more that I watch, it's just, it was hard for me to keep track of all the fast-paced elements and the fantastical events happening. So,
Jennifer Peterson, I know that you've got to get back to your rounds at the Children's Hospital that you're working at in San Diego. Before you go, you are young enough that you must remember a little bit of what you watched as a 4, 5, 6, 7-year-old. So I got to end with a very unscientific question. Do you have any sense of what kinds of programs had what kinds of effect on you when you were a young child?
Well, it's interesting because when I was really little, I used to watch Power Rangers a lot because that was the big show when I was growing up. And my parents actually said that I started imitating some of the behaviors from Power Rangers, and I wasn't allowed to watch that anymore. So I definitely had my parents interfere with television and kind of choose what I watched then. And after that, I would watch Arthur, and that became my favorite show. And my parents were happier when I imitated those behaviors rather than the Power Ranger behaviors.
Jennifer Peterson, now completing her internship at Rady Children's Hospital in San Diego and about to finish her graduate program with the University of Virginia in just a few weeks. Jen, thanks so much for making time for us.
Thank you for having me.
So to you on the other side of your radio, when was the last time you observed a child watching a television program? What, if anything, did you notice about the impact the TV show seemed to be having on that child? 888-WMRA-TALK is our phone number, 888-967-2825. Or you can post to us on the Virginia Insight Facebook page. Still with us here in the Virginia Insight studio, research psychologist Angeline Lillard, lead author of the new report out in this month's issue of the journal Pediatrics that's become known as the SpongeBob Study. And one of the things that your colleague, Jen Peterson, said just as she was leaving us, Angel, is that her parents said she was imitating behavior. That's not an uncommon thing for certain kinds of TV shows, is it?
No. So there were classic studies done in the late 50s by Al Bandura called the Bobo Doll Studies, which when children had watched an adult punching one of those blow-up dolls that has
it's
sand
like a blow-up clown that you can hit it and it
you
bounces
it.
Right back up.
Okay. You got it. So they'd watch them punch it, throw it around the room, sock it in the nose, and then afterwards they would more often do one of those behaviors than if they hadn't watched an adult do this. And this was a really important study because it got us away from behaviorism and towards thinking about the fact that people really do have thoughts. They really will imitate things even if they haven't been rewarded or punished for it, as the behavior is thought.
Yeah, the whole idea, what behaviorism would have predicted, is that children would only do something if they had reason to think they were going to get a reward for it.
That's right.
And what the Bobo study showed was
children will imitate things that they have seen basically on a film, even if nobody's rewarded them.
That maybe their sense of reward is doing something that they saw an adult do or that they saw somebody else do.
That's right. Something about just engaging in a behavior that they've watched is rewarding in itself to then go on and engage in. Children do imitate what they've seen others do, and it doesn't even have to be live. It can be off the television. And many years of research since have shown that children who watch more television are themselves more aggressive than other children.
We have this post on Facebook from Carolyn who says, in an ideal world, children wouldn't watch TV at all, but we no longer live in extended families with scores of siblings, dozens of cousins, and countless neighborhood kids to run and play with. TV and video games are babysitters. As bad as they might be, they are better than a child having to deal with an overwhelmed mom. Raising kids is isolating and exhausting. Moms need help, not more guilt.
I certainly can empathize with that. Children can be exhausting to be with, but you know, parents have choices, and they need to decide which choices they're going to make. Even within the realm of if they decide that television's what they want, there are lots of choices about what to watch, and some shows are known to have negative effects, both temporarily and over the long haul. And other ones aren't. So, for example, Sesame Street has positive effects on children's language acquisition, on Blue's Clues, Dora the Explorer. These shows are known to be anywhere between no negative effects to positive effects. Whereas other shows, study has shown that watching Teletubbies actually lowers children's language acquisition scores.
So somebody who's a parent yourself, which you are, although mm-hmm. your children are close to adulthood now, your thought is not to guilt parents, but to give them information they can use?
That's right. That's right. And parents have choices about what they want to do and how they want to set up the world for their children, so that they'll be learning and developing in the most positive ways.
We're going to continue our discussion with the author of what has become known as the SpongeBob Study in just about 1 minute. And George and Stuart Straft, you'll be next on the phone line. This is Virginia Insight. I'm Tom Graham. And you know, I can vividly remember the stories of a friend of mine, a professor of psychology at a major West Coast university, used to tell about how bad TV was for kids and how, when she became pregnant at a fairly late age, how determined she was to protect her daughter from the deleterious effects of television. But once she'd returned to work from maternity leave and was once again dealing with an extremely hectic schedule, she admitted that she found she'd needed to change her attitude. First, letting programs like Sesame Street play part-time babysitter, then even less educational shows. So I'm wondering if you listening might have had any similar experience as a parent. If you're willing to share your story, you can post to us on the Virginia Insight Facebook page or call in at 888-WMRA-TALK to speak with our guest, research psychologist Angeline Lillard. George and Stuart Straff, thanks for calling in. Your question or comment, please.
Yes, thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I'm an old grandfather, and I was wondering, did the study include backgrounds on the children, such as did they have siblings, the family economic status, and whether or not they came from a single or two-parent home? And I'll take my answer off the phone. Thank you.
Thank you very much, George.
We did have information on their basic demographics. They were basically middle to upper middle income children. That's, you know, we would like to have a broader spectrum, but that's who brings their children into the lab. We are now working on a study with a graduate student, Rakesha Greenwood, to look at lower income children as well.
And is it fair to say that although that you've done this study, what, three times now, that your initial findings were indicating to you, and the reason that this was published in Pediatrics Journal in part, was you felt that you were finding something that you wanted the rest of those areas of science that deal with children's development to pay attention to and do more study of.
Mm-hmm.
Not that you've found anything that absolutely answered all questions. It's sort of like you raise more questions than you answered.
Right, that's right. I mean, you know, we've seen this now three times. The children are randomly assigned to conditions, so we assume it's not something that they're walking into the lab with, but that it's something about having watched that particular show. But we don't know exactly what it is about the show. We don't know the long-term effects. We don't know if it's, you know, one possibility is what I said earlier, that it's just shaken up their minds. Another possibility is that they're identifying with the characters and then they're acting more like them in the moments afterwards. So there's lots to know here.
Meredith in Harrisonburg, thanks for calling in on Virginia Insight. Your question or comment for Angeline Lillard, please.
Yeah, hi. I was just calling to mention that when I grew up, I was in a household that had TV on in the background almost all the time, and I just had a son last year and had to make a really concerted effort to keep the TV off even when he was an infant. But I was wondering about the kind of auditory scrambling and changing up of TV shows. For instance, when I was nursing my son, it was kind of always a time that I allowed myself to watch TV. And as he grew older and became more engaged with the world, he became more distracted if I had the TV on and was trying to nurse him. So I know that you're talking about SpongeBob and kind of the visual jumps, but I'm wondering about the auditory jumps as well, and if you found anything with that and results later on in the children's lives.
Well, if my graduate student Rakesha Greenwood's listening, she'll be very excited that you said that, because the study she wants to get going on next is trying just auditory channel and just visual channel and seeing how children behave after just one or the other. So we plan to find that out. I'd call in a year. I'll let you know what we found.
Well, thank you.
Thanks for asking such a prescient question, Meredith. Let's go next to Mike in Harrisonburg. Mike, you're on Virginia Insight. Your question or comment, please.
I just wanted to say that I grew up in the 60s, and I used to watch all those ultraviolet Tom and Jerry and the old Roadrunner and Coyote. You know, and as far as emulating behavior, I never dropped an anvil on anybody's head or tried to cut anybody up with a meat cleaver or anything like that. You know, I think that children can actually discern between the fantasy of a cartoon and the reality of life.
And I think they often can. It is the case that children who watch more television, and particularly these kinds of more violent TV, do behave more aggressively themselves. So we do know that, but it doesn't mean that every child does in every instance. The other issue there is with cartoons, and I think, you know, more study needs to be done on this, but we know that when children watch a cartoon in which a problem is solved, they are not as good at transferring from the cartoon world into the real world as they are transferring from real world into real world. So, you know, when parents think, gee, my children are going to be getting messages from this cartoon that might be helpful or might be harmful in their real lives, it actually is a real questionable assumption, because it doesn't look like they make transfer from cartoon to real very well, at least as preschoolers.
Mike, I'm so glad you asked this question, because it relates to something that Jen Peterson said before she left us, when she was talking about her parents noticing that when she watched Power Rangers, she was imitating their behavior. And when she watched a quieter show, the PBS show, I guess it was Arthur, that they liked their daughter's behavior much better. There are a couple of aspects here. One is, some shows designed for children are real, I guess what's called live action. They're actual people. Others are cartoons that portray what look like real people. And then there are other shows that are completely fantastical, whether it's Roadrunner and Bugs Bunny and, you know, animals dropping anvils on each other, or SpongeBob and other creatures that live under the sea.
Right.
It seems to me that what Jen was talking about was that she was imitating as a child the behavior of a program that was based on what looked like real people.
Right.
And what I'm wondering about, and Mike, if it's okay if I address this first to Dr. Lillard, is there evidence that when it comes to either personality characteristics like honesty or loyalty or behavior, you know, whether you engage in kicking things around the house or you engage in supportive behavior with other people, the children are more influenced by programs that look like they're real people than by fantastical characters?
It is the case that children are more likely to imitate if they identify with the character. And so if the character is the same gender as them, the same age as them, then they're more likely to imitate them than if they're more different. So therefore, my assumption would be, and I've never seen a study of it, that they're less likely to do the things that SpongeBob does, for example, than that Caillou does.
Mike had identified with Roadrunner, he might have tried to find an anvil to drop on Coyote.
Possibly.
Or the other way around, I guess it was, wasn't it, Mike?
Yeah, it was. But I think that, you know, probably the behavior that she was imitating was just like striking those poses that the Power Rangers used to strike, you know. And I mean, they didn't go around hitting anybody or anything like that. They were like maybe punching at them, something like that. But I don't think it was as violent as the stuff I watched.
Right. It would be interesting to know. But the classic Bobo doll studies do show that right after watching punching the Bobo doll, children will punch the Bobo doll. But it doesn't mean that you're saying you didn't transfer from the cartoon to your own real life.
Yeah, Mike, thanks so much for your question. We have this from Kay on Facebook, who says, "We moms, especially single or working moms, have a lot more to juggle than our parents. We do not have the extended family to lean on. I let my kids watch TV, SpongeBob, anime, and many other cartoons and Disney films. I mixed it up when I could with outings and activities, but I am grateful that SpongeBob was around while I was paying bills or typing a resume. Most of my kids are in or out of college now, no worse for the TV experience. I take child psychology experts with a grain of salt. In fact, I tossed my child development books after baby number 2 came along. I have learned love, boundaries, and interest in your child are more important than studies, books, or experts."
Well, I would say that the child development studies do show the importance of love and interest in setting boundaries for your children. So I myself, as a parent, found it very useful to know all that information. And we're so lucky today because there's so many choices if you do want to put your child in front of the television in terms of what you have them watch. You can have them watch shows that are about nature and animals if you want, or if you want, you can have them watch SpongeBob. I think what's important to get from this is that if they have just been watching SpongeBob or a show like it, that they might not have the same self-control and ability to regulate their own behavior that they would have after they'd watched something else or just been drawing or reading.
This is from Doug on Facebook. A previous caller, interestingly, brought up the notion of training kids to cope with the way life actually works. Some parents prefer to protect younger children from the problems, drama, and bustle of the world. What does the science say about this? How does it relate to your study?
The science on this says that it is better to protect children from the hustle and bustle of the world. So we know, for example, that children who are in families where there is more routine and more regulation and more sameness in how things are done day to day actually grow up to be stronger people with more backbone, more able to guide their own behaviors, better self-regulation than children whose parents, you know, change the tune every day and change things up constantly.
We only have a couple more minutes to get in any phone calls. So if you want to get in a question or comment to Dr. Angeline Lillard, author of this new report in the journal Pediatrics that's become known as the SpongeBob Study, please do call us right now at 888-WMRA-TALK. That's 888-967-2825. Again, it seems to me, Angel, that the main point wasn't so much about SpongeBob, but about shows where there's lots of fantastical action, things that couldn't happen in real life, and that the scene changes are real quick, that it's really fast-paced, that seems to be what affects executive function.
Right. That's what we think the problem is. And we have another study going on in the lab now with a distinguished major student like Jen was, where we're trying to determine to what extent it's the fantasy and to what extent it's the fast pacing. But if you think about it, you know, you grow up in the world and you're used to certain physical events being able to happen and other events that can't happen. In fact, there are people that believe that babies are born pre-programmed to perceive the things that normally happen in the world, like gravity, that, you know, things will fall when they come off the edge of the table rather than floating in the world. But if you're watching a show like SpongeBob, they may well just float after coming off the table. And so by asking your perceptual system to take in so much information that doesn't correspond to the way that it's accustomed to, we think that that might be part of what depleted children's resources in this study.
This on Facebook from Carolyn. How do you compare video games to TV shows?
So video games is an area that's getting more and more study, and there are some benefits to watching videos and there are playing video games, and then there are some negatives. So, for example, along the benefits, children have faster hand-eye coordination after watching videos. They say they make very good drone pilots for the military, for example, after playing a lot of video. On the other hand, children who watch more video games do worse in school, achievements lower, and so there are other problems associated with it.
Nicole in Afton, looks like you're going to be the last call that we have time for. Your question or comment for Angeline Lillard, please.
I just wanted to say my son is almost 7, and he imitates everything he sees on TV. So we have to be extremely cautious, even with commercials, about what we let him watch. There's a football game on. Within 5 minutes, he's outside playing football. And if he's watching iCarly, he's doing whatever the characters are doing. So I think it's extremely important. I have twins, so I don't know if this is a boy-girl thing. But for me, it's extremely important that I'm, you know, watching everything that they watch. I have to monitor very, very carefully.
Nicole, thank you for that. And I guess I was wrong. If it's okay with you, I'm going to try to quickly squeeze in also a comment or question from Bly. Bly, tell us where you're calling from.
Well, I'm on the road, but I'm pulling over. I'm from Harrisonburg, and I loved the comment of that parent just then, because that's what I was calling to say, how important it is for parents to teach their children how to watch television and not just turn it off and make it a bad thing, but be aware of what they're watching and talk about it as a parent and child together or as a family. TV's there to be reckoned with. It's not going away, and they need to learn how to watch.
That's right. And there's also research supporting that when parents co-view with children and talk about what it is that they're seeing, a lot of the negative effects that we see go away. So absolutely, parents paying attention to what they watch, selecting what they watch, and then helping children to interpret it when they end up watching something that's negative is very important.
Nicole Ambly, thank you so much. We got 60 seconds left. Tell me a little bit about the reaction that you've had to this study, the way different areas of the world seem to react, different types of media reacted, whether you think people are missing the point or what you think the main point is.
Right. So some of the headlines, for example, that UVA picked up from newspapers around the world translated as things like, you know, SpongeBob makes kids stupid. And, you know, this isn't at all what we were saying. We don't know what happens over time when children have watched shows like this. But what we do know is that at least immediately after watching such shows, they don't seem to be functioning up to their normal levels.
And again, such shows, you mean shows that are fantastical, that challenge notions of how the world works, and that go by with really fast pace.
That's right. That's right. So Fanboy and Chum Chum is another one that we've studied. And it's not quite as fast paced as SpongeBob and not quite as fantastical. SpongeBob kind of goes over the top with that. But it is very fast paced and fantastical. All kinds of things happen that don't really happen. And after watching that show as well, 4- and 6-year-olds.
And more study to come.
Types of tests.
Yes, more study to come. Okay. Our guest has been Dr. Angeline Lillard, professor of psychology at the University of Virginia and lead author of the new study in the journal Pediatrics titled The Immediate Impact of Different Types of Television on Young Children's Executive Function, as well as earlier in the program, the co-author of that study, UVA graduate student Jennifer Peterson. Angel, thanks so much for making time for us.
Thank you for having me.
You can find audio postings of Virginia Insight by going online to WMRA.org, then clicking on Programs, and then clicking on Insight Archives. If you go to that page, you can find links to more information about our guests and, in fact, a link to the actual report in Pediatrics magazine. Plus, if you go to Virginia Insight's Facebook page and click like, you'll have access to a whole bunch more information about our broadcasts there as well. Thanks so much for tuning in for this edition. I'm Tom Graham. Hope we can get together again soon for more insights.